talk today about will people ever pay for privacy? It's sort of an interesting question. And the way I'm going to go through this is I'm going to talk about the importance of privacy. What is privacy? Why is there a conflict? And then talk about how to include privacy in product plans and how to build things. Why does privacy matter? Does it matter to people? Polls say that it does. In the late 90s, privacy was polling in the United States above education as an issue that people cared about. It was polling up there with taxes as the number one, the number two issue that people cared about. And of attention paid to it, news stories that come out, this privacy invasion, that privacy invasion, what's going on. And people seem to care about privacy. If you call, ask people about the privacy versus security. People care quite deeply about these things. The debate gets emotional very quickly. People's feelings, you get riled up and roused. At the same time, people tell strangers all sorts of things about themselves. So, go to an airport, very cheap products. I worked for Zero Knowledge for 3 years building advanced technology, and we had way cool stuff. We thought it was some of the coolest privacy technology ever. A lot of people agreed. We had 150,000 betas. We were in Oculus, and so there's they. And oh yeah, I should say that Zero Knowledge is still in, didn't put a lot of effort into initially, which was a personal firewall. That's what people understood. And all of the amazingly good privacy, no one ever understood. It goes around. You hear it a fair. People won't pay for privacy. They don't care about their privacy. They just get riled up at whatever it is you do. I think that's the wrong conclusion. And it's a conclusion that gets thrown at me a lot after my experience at Zero Knowledge as a spokesperson for Zero Knowledge. People have come up to me and said, haha, you will. We just didn't sell them something they could understand. When you need to sell a product, and I'll go into some detail on this, but solved, they didn't understand. It was a nifty idea and reason. Talk about network. It was a way to internet fully anonymously and do web, email, participate in chat rooms, the student email address, adam@freedom.net. If I picked adam@freedom.net, it sort of could be linked. If I picked call@freedom.net, activities on the internet are that someone is watching what you're doing, that back either to reflect poorly on you at work, or your family will find out things that you don't want to interact with people in a privacy-enhanced way. So that you could separate your personas, you could do different things. We spent an enormous amount of money from our investors on making sure that there was no single point of trust. We would look at other systems, and that is a sort of system. People are telling you about how it works. You're making sure that the news. We'd spend hours talking to a journalist. And so the Freedom Network is not operating. We shut it down for financials a while back. Jumping to what privacy are things that people include? At Zero Knowledge, we meant this unobservability issue, that you could do things online without being observed. But when we told people they were a crime, they would talk to us about identity theft. They would talk to us about, that's not what we mean by privacy. And so we've got some, the right to be left on this from Brandeis in this law review article, and there's a lot of the debate about privacy. Informational self-determination, the ability to control, German Supreme Court decision. Lie and get away with it. I love that definition. It's a great definition of privacy. If I'm private, if I'm doing things privately, I can tell you something else, and you're not going to know the difference. And that may be a goodbye, more my sexuality. That isn't the truth. Because I want to keep those private. So lie and get away with it can actually be an interesting definition. And abortion. In the United States, a woman's right to have an abortion is part of the constitutional right to privacy. And if you take that and you compare it to spam, anonymity on the internet, because I think it helps things. And the throwing this, they pay for privacy. They pay for curtains. curtains? I'll come back to that. About this in these terms, was I was reading a home deck where privacy is right up at the top in 50-point text covering head. And I said, what is this crap? It's not privacy, it's curtains. And then I said, no, wait. The people who paid for this ad, well, they might be, they are spending some money because they got it from customers and they understand their customers. Their customers are thinking of curtains as privacy. And I like to say that curtains are the world's privacy-enhancing technology, that they provide the ability, and then lie. People pay for unlisted phone numbers. In California, are unlisted. And people pay several distributed information. Business, lots of business in private banking. Know how much you and your bank know how much money you have, else does. But as I hope I am making clear, the word has way too many meanings. And because it has all of those meanings, people get sloppy with it. You can say privacy and mean an unlisted phone number. You can say it and mean anonymous e-cash. Yesterday, in which we say to mean encrypted email. But it wasn't, it was privacy with respect to the business. And because it has all of these meanings, people get dramatically confused when you say we have a privacy or we are privacy. And that question of privacy is confusing. It's really confusing. This is not a complete list. I've tried to make this list large enough that people, and it was the first or so things that, the only thing these things in common is that they are all privacy to someone. There's really a lot of privacy, even curtains. A book called Banking in Greeks. First banks in Athens were created for tax evasion purposes. The Athenians taxed their very richest citizens, and they were like, sponsor a temple for a year. Pay for this enormous drop-off. Either you paid taxes, in which case you paid an enormous amount, or you didn't pay tax to take ownership of the property. And when they owned the property, it wasn't taxed, because it was owned by the bank, not you. So, banks started out a very long ago, and to the book in the speaking, cash, you know? I can go into a store here in Amsterdam and buy things that my government at home in the United States doesn't want me to buy. And of course, they're all on a credit card bill. And that's problem. Technology. You want part of your identity, perhaps your age, perhaps your citizenship, to do something about you who are that little bit. You are not going to a bar and you want curtains and chains, which can be thought of as. People are buying these things to get privacy. You're dealing with the inconvenience of you not having an account of where all the money was spent in the month for privacy purposes. All anti-spyware, all of these things, I believe, are indications that will in fact take your privacy. When it's an issue, understand how your privacy is being invaded. Computer screen privacy was held in New York City back in the day, and they took an ID for a copy. Pretty cool for a screen privacy conference. But as a result, people was invaded. This was the most voted out, the irony of it, after the conference. And so when people are aware that their privacy is being invaded, and when they are aware that there is a survival for them, they take steps to protect their privacy. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to go off on tangents here because I think there's the reason. One of the things that went on is this system. Look at this system that somebody spent millions of dollars on. Then we send it this packet right here that falls apart and we get it. And that happens in complex systems of all types. That it becomes difficult to engineer the system to do all the things you want because of these strange interactions. And with privacy, cryptographic privacy technologies, things like Mash, very cool stuff that the cyberpunks played with, that others have been invented, is very complex. I spent a good chunk of my 3 years in Suriname with inventors of the technology who were part of our staff. That worked. That's not good enough to process easy news, but real problems, and to function.
people left, moving into Canada and Japan, there are data protection laws.
So, there's great audio of me stepping on this. let me know if that happens again, if you catch a lot. Actually, there's another thing that brought me to the issue of privacy. Because in the United States, human data protection law as privacy law. Privacy, that's correct. Don't go to the core of what many Americans would like privacy to, which is the right to be left alone determination. They're based on, you give us this data, say that we can balance the interests of society and the individual. I believe that the dichotomy Americans think of as privacy, what the laws say, is one of the reasons that there is so much resistance and so much difficulty with like GLB model. They are the only privacy laws to model. Enormous resistance from American companies. Privacy law means to the operation hospital of Amazon's children's site. And I believe debates come from the confusion about the and societal interaction those meanings of privacy into this conflict. The first conflict is organize, store, and use data. For example, if Amazon wants to ship you a book, they have two important sets of which is an address that they can mail things to you information. And if you saw Lance HoneyNet Technologies, those credit card numbers are stolen and traded for $1 a piece. The data isn't protected. And there are good I'm going to talk about in a minute. And the other conflict is the complete and fuzziness of privacy. So, it doesn't have any general purpose privacy which applies business. Privacy law, which, but there isn't a law as to business. It wants to collect all of this data, they'd like your name, address, or number, whatever else they find out. And they're going to optimize your user experience, provide things of value to you, entertain euphemisms for some of you collecting it. And your disempowerment. How many are American? A very small number. Okay. So, you discover if you're a privacy aware in the United States, is you try not to give out your social security. For example, your health insurance and health insurance, because not having health out of your own pocket, which I believe contributes to the issue of privacy. A lot of privacy ends up with the, it's a term from the act fielding. It's when I do something, you know, I have a factory and spewing toxin in there. That toxin is not really a cost to me, it's a cost to, and I believe that many of the issues that we run into when people are asked me are externalities. My storing, Amazon's storing of your social security number, creates a problem for you, not them. It creates a problem when information is stolen and traded around. If I steal your credit card number and sell it for a dollar, you're liable for $50. This has been held liable for the costs incurred by, and so rationally, end up spending a lot on, because they're in a position to insure against these risks. Economic theory about externality applies variates difficult because companies don't want to care, and so you end up with question A. As AIDS patient lists. About 4 years ago in Florida, a guy worked for the State Department of Health, set himself up in a little side business, selling to the AIDS patient list that the state of Florida maintained. And if you had just met someone and wanted to date them, call up and find out if they were HIV positive or not. That's an externality. wants to collect the info for very good public health reasons. Individuals want to keep it private, also for very good reasons, and very hard to deal with. And I believe that people intuitively understand. People say, how are you going to protect precautions in order to ensure that you have? There's actually a news story I read about a week ago. Madonna lives in central London. And in central London, they have this road toll pricing. And if you live downtown, you can get a discount from the £5 a day fee to drive downtown. Madonna won't, because she won't hand over her unlisted home phone number. The requirement, I don't expect that Madonna went through a complex economic analysis. Her business manager might have. But I don't think she went and said, oh, there's externality, people won't invest in computer security to the extent that I want them to. She intuitively understood that the way to protect her data was to keep it. And people who do that are called extremists. Started that. He runs a survey here in the United States, and he calls people who care deeply about their privacy variously fundamentals, and that they've risen from pragmatists who are willing to negotiate, who are willing to give up personal data in exchange for some value, say. And the unconcerned, Donald's, and the unconcerned are shrinking. 5 years ago, 15. The extremists have grown from about 10% to about 30%, and yeah, that shift. The issue of privacy, the question of will people pay, are people, the question is how do you get them to pay? Are doing exactly rational things. When a business says, I need this data from you, sometimes they're making that up, sometimes to engage in demographics. Sometimes they're doing it for perfectly reasonable reason. They're not doing that so they can sell a database of credit cards on it because they need a way of getting your money and credit cards. So the sides are rational. Both sides have very different pain in how to build things out. And been going on for a long time. One of just really random news stories over the last little while is organizations that I thought were totally unconcerned about privacy issues, concerns because they're hearing it from their members, agents, has come out against the CAPS-2 system. Do people know what CAPS-2 is? No. CAPS-2 is the second generation, which the United States Department of Homeland, Delta Airlines, and as yet credit reporting agencies, background check agencies of personal data, are building so they can build profiles of terrorists and decide based on indications in your credit history whether or not you are a threat and should be allowed to fly. And the travel agencies have come out and said, this is ridiculous. People don't want to be profiled in this way. We're hearing about it from our corporate customers. They're hearing about it from their employees that they don't see a value to this. They're worried about their information coming across. And it was clear in the quote PR people that the travel agency does not want to deal with this issue. They want it to go away. Situation. They see the government coming in and saying we need security, and their customers coming in and saying we value our privacy, we see no security benefit from this. They're tired of it. Businesses are getting in the United States. If you ask an HR person about privacy issues, they get lots and lots of complaints. Who are you giving my social security number to? How are you protecting my salary information? People are becoming engaging in the course of business. There's the government national news, and businesses are becoming there ought to be space for people to make some. So, again, big, fuzzy, one of the reasons that every year we see issues is because we're having trouble now. And just a moment, that beyond new ways of thinking about privacy, beyond understanding, though, that there are actual useful steps you can to reduce the pain and suffering which privacy engenders. So, moment. We have this really cool free anonymous IP stuff. If you ask a cryptographer about us, if you ask someone free stuff, they'd say, oh yeah, it was really cool, but it wasn't all that usable. And when we asked our customers what it did, they didn't really understand. We got 15,000 people. I believe a lot of those were paying because they thought, and they want, even with, I mean, what we're going to do to build a business. Don't know what IP is. So I think the wrong lesson to take is the lesson that people come up and nudge me about and say, so people won't pay for privacy. Yeah, you guys prove that. That is not a good lesson from other things you might look at in the market. It's like any other product that you're asking people to pay for. They want a certain something that they've got. Because we've all looked in through other people's windows, see way. And so, it's well understand how curtains work. Anyone? Good, good. Who here understands how anonymous IP is, weirdo? Oh, I should raise my hand too. I keep repeating this because I think it is a very important point, which is very to miss, even when they're emotional. So, threats and defenses. This is sort of security 101, where you have to, problems you're trying to defend against are, if you put in encryption, and able to jump on the network in an encrypted fashion, or if you're reading your traffic, then that may be a perfectly valid solution. If you're worried that people will log in and browse over to your file servers and take files off of them, then it's a less of your threats. They about have to be both the actual threats that we as experts can understand and the threats that your consumers, that your customers are worried about, regardless of whether those threats are default or. When your consumers understand, they see every week credit card numbers being personally that people are worried about this. It's just the rational way to respond to what you see happening on an ongoing basis. So I'm going to talk about identity theft in Europe at this point. Is it happening on the sort of scale that it's happening in the United States?
I think it's good.
Okay. Outranks fraud as a complaint to the United States government consumer protection hotline. More problems with identity on eBay. There are two types of identity theft. Yeah, okay. Which is account takeover, where the address form, and I'm now getting your credit card bill. I call up, I say, hey, this is Paul. I lost my wallet. I need a new credit card. And they send me to the new address. I now have a real credit card and then go and spend money on. I can sign it myself so the signature looks right. I make up a social number, but I have enough information that they give me a credit card in his name with address. Very different forms. Application fraud through financial difficulties. Fraud is mortgage application fraud, maybe 10 or 20,000 name, and then you apply for a second, and you take that second mortgage, you turn it into a line of credit, you drain the line of credit, and you've just stolen the value of one's house, which is often in the hunt problem. It's much more difficult to deal with than account takeover problems. The ID theft problem, right, the second half of this slide, is ID theft has grown to the point where there are now several different insurance companies who include this in their various insurance policies. The problem has grown to the dimensions where that is a sense of statistically analyze how much that will cost you, which is in the insurance companies, so that they can make a profit selling this stuff. Because ID theft has become an issue, and it's not discussed in chart, it's identity theft. Visa has come out a rule that you will no longer be able to on a credit card slip. You can only print the first four and the last four digits or something like that. Well, that's sort of useful if you're, that's not nearly so large a problem as application fraud. Account takeover is something that is a threat which consumers understand. They've been gathering the card on the credit cards for a long time. And so, an important threat, it deals with a very real threat that the action of the credit card companies that is visible doing something to deal with this problem. And whether that's a good or a bad thing, it's only bad. It's only addressed the issues of credit card storage in these databases which script can break into, take over, and go. But it is an economically driven privacy decision. The company see because they see that as value. That I hope to give you as you go back to your jobs and you may have to add a product is by some of this background and by explaining issues, you may be more able to really important that they should receive your company. That's what one of the reasons into the so the whole account table cash. Digital cash is where you spend money with a merchant in a way that those the merchant doesn't get identifying information that it can store. It gets something cash or a traveler's check that it can the bank deposit and know it will. Very, very cool stuff. Not really widely deployed. Download a client, open a new bank account. It was considered for a consumer that the trials that happened didn't go very well. I believe the reason that the trials didn't go well don't actually have a good understanding of the back-end financial systems. They don't understand the risks. In the United States, they're not exposed, even if they understand those risks, they're not exposed to the liability. My credit card number being $50. And so, to use it a lot, because they don't see a threat to their financial well-being on it. And so you have this really cool privacy which I would love to see deployed. I would be excited for it to be deployed. I mean, doing the things that they have. Very important that you do match these things. The consumer wants to use them. So, the hell with it. You've got these technologies that don't really have a choice in what insurance company they're going with. Everyone wants the same. You've got all these externalities and these customers that are satisfied. Is it worth doing anything? And I believe that the answer is yes. I think that putting effort into privacy have a commercial payoff. I think that companies that build better systems will do better. That is increasing in importance that people do at a level can see what the privacy implication or different. You need to not just build privacy at the back end, collect information, explain, and I believe that effort will have a payoff. On the flip side, I think that being lazy about privacy will create problems. And I'll have a few examples for that, but TRW Credit had to change their name because they were so hated. They're now Experian. But because they had such a bad reputation, they figured they need to brand themselves. So you may be in a regulated industry. The European Data Protection Directive. And oftentimes you'll find that unless those risks have an effect on your business, you are not required to have all sorts of expensive compliance efforts going. I'm not a lawyer. Talk to your lawyers and your regulators before you believe me about not being required to do certain. To jump into actually take what I've told you. Privacy is the wrong word to use. I think that we can do something. How do you do so? One way is a privacy impact assessment. It's now with government organizations, for Canadian government organizations. I don't know of it being required anywhere in Europe yet. Slides will be on you to copy the URLs. And methodology says it comes from the environments which you make when what that's going to have in a structured way. The first question you ask in doing a privacy impact assessment, what data do we have? And are you collecting data that you don't actually need for use in case we need it? Or need in a broader sense than you're collecting? You're collecting people's ages down to a... Why are you getting a birth date instead of a year? You know, you need to know that people are in a certain body and say are athletic or people 18, and you need to collect this. And so it's possible to collect less information. Less information. You know, if someone's made a name, I don't know. And if I don't need to collect that information, if I never, I'm creating risk for my customers. I am not by knowing when I will test. You go through and you ask yourselves the questions of what am I collecting? What am I storing? And then more generally, what am I doing? Are you selling to your partners? One bank I worked for in the United States had a partnership agreement. I got involved in this project because I was securing social security number and date of birth to a partner. And they didn't really have an opt-in, opt-out. They didn't know the data transfer was happening. And social security numbers. What they were actually using was a credit score of do we send this presentation or not. We have those credit scores, and just as much as you say, I want to give credit, I want to get as customers, everyone has a score between this range and this range, wealth and other things. So we could have just transferred the scores. Everyone thought about the privacy and risk implications of the data transfer doing. No one looked at it from the question of what are we doing? We're doing it. I'm making that switch. So there's going beyond privacy impact assessments. Okay, do an assessment happening. The most important thing that you can change, figure out what you need and why. And this sounds really simple, but when you actually sit down and do it, many companies just that we use the data later. Well, if time you collect it, you know, if you, let's say you use that later. With the rate is you know, have a negotiated pay cut, income data isn't going to more than a year anyway. This can't be longer accurate. So if you take a minimization approach and you say this is why we need it, and then find the people at less risk. This really goes to the customer's concern that I see these guys getting broken into. You know, a story, another don't keep their want to trust them. And by acknowledging that concern, by saying, yeah, you are right to be concerned, and to help address your concern with why we're collecting it, you can reduce the amount of data to your site from the customer's viewpoint. To say, if I saw this on a competitor's website or an industry, how would I respond? I think, yes, this is the Washington Post. Names have been left here in here because I think, and I talking to some people. I didn't invoke this, I did this. It happened as I was sitting there on my ISP's tech support channel. And these other random folks who I don't really know were talking about, if everyone in the world lies on these selecting, I don't click through to the Washington Post very often because I hate this. I don't store their cookie. And so it takes me a minute to get through this little form, Washington Post to sell, because I hate going to this form. And I visit their site very often. It's only when they have a really interesting story that I will ever see. So, they're probably collecting demographic data. You collect zip codes because in the United States, a zip code demographics, it tells you people's age range, it probably tells you a lot about their race, it tells you a lot. And so, you can sell your ads for more money because you know something about the user. Except, Ford barely costs a lot less. And so the Washington Post collects this data, which doesn't really increase it's my belief that this is a poor business practice, that if they looked at this from their customer's perspective, even popping up the form when you, because it's not doing them much good, and it may be doing them some harm. The state of Georgia has just passed a new law. I complain about identity theft. I don't know if you can read it corrupts your name and address. It's your social security number. It doesn't ask for your mother's maiden name. But my fix this site, just a joy to behold, is you maybe visit dt.nw3c, state of Georgia. You be the judge. So I do want to say that some congratulations for trying to do something about the identity theft problem. It is a problem. They are trying to address it. It's even probable to help manage the problem. They need to have a social security number and date of birth for record matching purposes when they're going out and trying to help the consumer. I do think they could be a little more sensitive. These people have been sensitized to issues of identity theft. That's why they're there. Whether or not filling out that site, I went to try it and then I realized I might be colluding. Their data theft is a serious problem. These folks are probably, and I didn't want to just put in bad data that they would have to, you know, someone would have to go and weed out. So I didn't go to check to see whether or not you could enter in half the form. It's possible that you could. It's also possible that there's commentary in the 3-page privacy statement, which they have, which was written by lawyers for lawyers. And as someone who has read an awful lot of privacy policies, I couldn't understand what was mandatory, what wasn't, and what was happening with the data in the 10 minutes I spent trying to figure it out. So some conclusions. First off, privacy is complex. It's multifaceted. It's painful. It's ugly. It's causing the complexity, the misuse of the word, are causing problems that don't have to be there. I try to avoid using the word privacy now in discussion because I find that avoiding the word helps me clarify my own thinking. And I find that to be a useful technique. But I also find that by moving away from privacy to other terms, data protection, self-determination, anonymity, it becomes a more manageable problem. By knowing what you're talking about in more detail, it becomes easier to do what you want to do. Promises are not going... are not enough. They're not going to satisfy the privacy camp. That camp of people who are concerned about how their data is going to be used are not going to be satisfied with promises. They want you to use less data. They're driving laws in places where those laws are divergent from the legal tradition. You see it a lot in Europe with the phone tapping laws, what have you. There's a lot of conflict around these laws. Understanding the problem, dividing up the problem into more manageable chunks is a really helpful thing. It is surprising how when you slice something at the right point, you end up with two much smaller, much more manageable problems that you can use in a way to get a competitive advantage. Ask for less information, explain why you're using it, reduce what you're asking for, and then advertise your privacy sensitiveness. Go after those customers, go after that group of customers who are concerned about how their data to be used, and tell them that you, at any time, for any reason, because that will generate business for you. So I hope, I expect that I've been to understand what people will pay for and how to make good use of that for improving. Are there questions?
What I see, at least here in the Netherlands, is that people are more or less forced by various discount groups to actually give up their privacy. So the companies actually are forcing the users.
Well, what do you mean by force? Is this like a supermarket card?
The supermarket giving a 10% discount, then the blue ones give you like a 40% discount. It just becomes hardly impossible to not take on the discount. And then the incomes or welfare or salaries are more or less basing themselves on those discounts again. So it's hard to avoid being forced to give out your information.
But you said some of the those are between 10 and 40%, right?
No, the supermarket is 10, the railroad is 40.
The what's 40?
40%.
Railway.
Train ticket.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that's actually a fascinating number. And yes, people are being pressured to give out this information. But I think an interesting thing to take from that 40% number is that businesses don't like giving 40% discounts. No one wants to give a 40% discount to get their customers to do something. Why is it 40%? It may well be that it's 40% because at 20% they weren't getting enough signups. When they did their marketing analysis, they discovered that if you're not giving people close to half off their product, they'll actually pay the difference. With supermarket cards, I know this because you and I discussed it, people are allowed to give false information. When people are allowed to lie and get away with it, the discount is smaller. And I think that what you can take from this is that people are willing to pay a fair amount for their privacy. And I would be fascinated to see, and I don't know if it would be legal to try this experiment, if offering people a 25% discount on their groceries with an ID card, or 10% without it, which one would they select? And I think that would be a fascinating experiment, because I believe you would get a lot of people who would show up and say, I'd prefer to lie. I want the 10% discount with no ID card. And I believe that is a... And I see some people nodding around the audience. I believe that is a clear indication that yes, people will in fact pay for privacy, and they are economically rational about how they do it. Now, over time, I expect that the discount that we need for a grocery card will increase as stories of abuse start to come out. In the United States, we've had cases already where people's purchase histories with their discount grocery cards have come up in lawsuits. There was a man in Texas who slipped in the grocery store, went to sue the grocery store, and they said, if you sue us, we will bring up the fact that you're an alcoholic buying two bottles of gin every week, and the lawsuit was dropped. I fully expect that at some point, someone's purchase of condoms at a grocery store with a discount card will be used in a divorce proceedings. That, you know, you and the missus are not using condoms and you're buying a box a week. Seems sort of incriminating. And so as these things happen, as people become aware of the uses, the secondary uses to which their data is put, the discount that you will need in order to get people to give up their private information will increase.
But you see also the other side of the coin, where kidnappers are being found because they kidnap the person. This is like a major story in the Netherlands. Where they actually track the person or the car by the mobile phone signal.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always these security, state security.
Yes. I realize I should repeat your question for the sake of the recording. The question of security, where there was a case here in the Netherlands of someone, a kidnap victim being found because of the mobile phone being tracked. In this particular presentation, I'm simply ignoring that question. I'm trying to focus. It is a very different question, the law enforcement question versus the willingness to pay for privacy, the unwillingness to pay for privacy, the value of privacy to consumers. When you have a situation where data is being gathered under a warrant, under a lawful mandate, is a separate question from when data is gathered without that mandate. You know, I want to read the newspaper online. Today I can go out on the street, I can buy a newspaper with cash. My purchase of the newspaper is fully anonymous. My choice of what articles to read is fully anonymous. Whereas with the online newspaper, if I've given up any information about myself, it may well be that they are tracking which stories I read and building a profile about which stories I read. I prefer they not be able to do that. And so I do things like turn off cookies in my browser. Each time I shut down the browser, I get a whole new set of cookies. And that's my choice, and I think that my choice is a valid one and a good one. The issue of laws is sort of separate from this talk.
Yeah. How do you feel, for example, with Amazon, where, for example, Amazon keeps purchase histories, and they say things like, we have recommendations for you, or customers who also bought this, also bought. Because whilst I really don't like the privacy issues there, or sorry, I don't like the fact that they're recording this information, occasionally I have found books that I never would have found otherwise, that is just very interesting to me.
Sure, so the question of Amazon, and their purchase recommendations. A friend of mine has this great Amazon screenshot on his website. He was shopping for a large TV, and it says, people who bought 32-inch plasma television sets also bought Hot Anal Action 7. So I don't have a problem with Amazon making that data available, using that data. I think that there are several important questions that are raised. The first question is, can I get my data out of the system? Can I say, I don't want you to have this data anymore? And with Amazon, the answer is no, you can't. The second question is, what is required for someone else to get that data? And the answer there is, it's probably pretty easy. I can just file a lawsuit, subpoena your book purchasing history, and know everything you've read. My own personal response to that is I only buy computer security and privacy books from Amazon. And they actually give me good recommendations in the field. It's sort of annoying that they keep recommending books that I already own. But the Amazon has to today get personally identifiable information about you. So my big concern is that you can't destroy the data. You can't say, I don't want anyone to know I bought a copy of Vox or a copy of Leaves of Grass, which are the books that Monica and Bill gave to each other as little presents and then came out later. Your book purchasing history can be embarrassing, and I think Amazon ought to offer a way. I think Amazon would sell more books if they offered a way to say, after a year, delete my name from the purchase history. Disassociate my books year to year or month to month, because most, you can still do an analysis of what I'm buying, because what I buy in a short period of time is probably more useful for recommendations than what I buy over years. I have a friend who's a professor at Harvard and a mother of three, and she also has some hobbies, and her book recommendations are all over the map. She does not get useful recommendations at all because her interests are too varied for Amazon's system to make useful advice. If she could control it and say, you know, this is one personality and I'm going to use one name, and this is another personality and I'm going to use another name, all shipped to her house under different names, then she might get better recommendations. If Amazon increased their willingness to say, you can tell us who you are in more complicated ways. If I can have my computer security hat and say my fly fishing hat, which I don't own, but if I did, if I could separate those subjects, then perhaps Amazon would have better data. If they were more respectful of my choices about how my information was used, I might be more willing to buy more books. Is that? Lisa?
Two things. One is that one major credit card vendor in the U.S. had a long-time policy of not giving out the addresses of their customers to other companies. So when a company wanted them to send a mailing, they would basically take the names and addresses from the person in charge of that company to mail it to their customers.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for this is that once they gave out their customer list, they couldn't charge for it again because people were making copies. So this is their good business that a couple of years ago they decided was actually a privacy-enhancing thing that they'd done forever in social selling.
Cool. I think that's great that there's a credit card company. What company is it?
Providian.
Okay, so Providian, a U.S. credit card company, doesn't sell their customer name and address lists. They'll market to you by taking your marketing materials and delivering them to their customers. And now they're marketing as a privacy thing. Cool.
And the second thing was that I think your newspaper analogy is really great. One thing to think about privacy that's an additional thing to say is that when I'm sitting in the train with my newspaper and somebody reads it, I have this kind of expected use of the law, there's a legal term for that, that says that somebody's going to come and like throw me in jail because my neighbor is reading my paper.
Mm-hmm.
So my experience with privacy reading the paper is such that it's okay if my neighbor reads my paper. There's no problem. But when technology changes and shifts and people can find that, they can apply an existing law. There is a change in behavior and how things.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I think that that's something that's being missed.
Absolutely. There's the change in law, the change in technology, the change in venue interacts strangely with people's expectations of privacy, of what laws are applied and what laws aren't, and it's complicated.
There's a way in which I'm being very specific about for privacy in the United States. I have a landline. So there's caller ID in the United States where it says your name and the phone number when you call it. In order to get this information to not be sent out, but also for it not be listed in the phone book, you have to pay 28 cents a month, which made me go absolutely ballistic when I found out about that. It really pissed me off. But I paid for it just sort of gradually saying, well, not that much, and I should care enough about this. They charge far more, I'm sure. Were they allowed to set whatever price they want? But that's
mm-hmm.
my thought. And I found out this great benefit to that, which is that now when telemarketers call my house, they don't know what my name is. So they can't pretend to have had some pre-existing relationship with me.
Ah.
So they call, and I can just tell them to shove it much more easily. I don't need someone sitting in a maximum security prison being slave labor to be like trying to collect my credit card number, which is actually what I want. But the related to that, there's this not terribly well-publicized feature of cell phones, I've been told, it seems to be the case, that they will keep commercial callers from calling you on your cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's illegal for people to commercially call people's cell phones because it typically costs more, or if this is just a service that's provided, but I found that if I give my cell phone number to companies when making purchases and stuff, then I do not get later on commercial calls on my cell phone. I still get the call saying, hey, did you get it, or something like that. Just about any legitimate need to call me, they'll still call me. And I get that benefit, which I do want. There's a problem, I do want them to call me. But I don't then get the commercial